I want to say something about poetry this morning, because what we call Shabbat Shirah, this Shabbat of song, is also, or in fact, is really a Shabbat of poetry. As you may know, shir in Hebrew serves both purposes. A shir is a song, but a shir is also a poem. And poetry, as Emerson teaches us, is actually the origin of our speech. He calls language fossil poetry, because every expression that we use originally began as a sort of poem. Think of the first person who came up with the idea of originally. What a beautiful and poetic idea. Originally, at the start, the beginning of things, it's a poem. But then, of course, we use the word again and again and again. And how beautiful a word is again, to do something over that has been done before. And it flattens out its effect. And so what happens is we read poems or hear them spoken, and unless somehow we renew our amazement at the use of language, we forget the riches that they contain within them. And I want to turn back to Shirat Hayam and suggest, if not demonstrate, that all of our tradition is contained in one word. One word that we read every morning at the service. One word that we translate but don't pay attention to. The shir begins, Az Yashir Moshe, so Moses sang, Ubnei Yisrael, et Hashira Hazot. This song they sang. And they go on to say, Aziv Zimratya, God is my strength and my song, Vihili Lishua, and will become my salvation. Ze Eli, this is my God. All of Israel, imagine them all saying that at the shore of the sea. This is my God, Ze Eli. And then comes the word, Va'anvehu, and I will glorify him. Now, first of all, you're going to have to give me a pass for the rest of the sermon on him, okay? Those of you who don't like hymns, that is H-I-M-S, not H-Y-M-N-S. Those of you who don't like hymns, that's the Hebrew construct. Substitute in your mind him, her, it, or none of the above, all of the above. But what the poem says is, I will glorify him. And the rabbis are perplexed by this, because how do you glorify God? What can it possibly mean to glorify God? Yes, we're at the other side of the sea. We're grateful. We're subordinate. We're free. But where do we get the power to glorify God, creator of the universe, who with a word splits the sea and destroys the Egyptians? What do we get to do that glorifies God? So Rabbi Yishmael in the Talmud says, what does it mean to glorify God? Anvehu means na'eh. To do something beautiful. How do you glorify God? You buy a beautiful lulav. You build a beautiful sukkah. Tzitzit na'eh. You get a nice talis. In other words, when you serve God with beautiful things. And that's a way of glorifying God. There are, in fact, stories that have their origin in Eastern Europe. It's a common theme in Yiddish literature about the search for the perfect etrog on Sukkot. Right? And somebody who gives away everything he has to find the perfect etrog, and inevitably what happens in the story is he's walking home to his impoverished family, impoverished because he had to find a beautiful etrog, and of course he drops it in the street, the piton breaks and it's not kosher, and it teaches you a lesson, right? Which is, get a nice talis, but don't break the bank. So you should glorify God, says Rabbi Yishmael, through nice things. When you get invited to someone's house for a nice dinner, you don't wear rags. When you're going to put on a talit to be before God, you should make it a nice talit. Show that you care. But that's not enough. Obviously, this word yields more than get a nice talis. And so, Abba Shaul in the Talmud says what it means to glorify God is to be like God. Chanun v'rachum. God is gracious and compassionate, we are told. And if you're going to glorify God, then you do it by fulfilling your mission in this world to be like God, in other words, to be good, to observe the mitzvot. To live a godly life is to glorify God who made you. Every parent and every child knows the feeling of saying, I'm so proud of you, my child. You've made me proud. Now, children feel ambivalent about this. On the one hand, it's nice to make your parents feel proud. On the other hand, you hate to think that everything you do is just a reflection on your parents. But it's a little safer if everything you do is a reflection on the God who made you, if what you're doing is good. So, for Abba Shaul, unlike for Rabbi Yishmael, it's not what you have, it's who you are. It's not the tallis you put on, it's the decency with which you act all during the week, wearing a tallis or not. That's va'anvehu. That's what it means to glorify God. Ibn Ezra has a different idea. Whenever you don't know exactly what to do with a word, you get a lot of interpretations. Ibn Ezra uses nave. Nave means a dwelling place. What does it mean to glorify God? It's to build for God a sanctuary. In other words, to invite God into the world. The Beit Mikdash, the temple, that's what it meant to glorify God. It was to say to God, we have a place for you to dwell in this world. Granted that you're everywhere, but we want you to know that we have a special designated place where we go to see you. And so, for Ibn Ezra, a sanctuary, the temple originally, but any sanctuary, is a fulfillment of this word, va'anvehu. So what we have here is a sort of history of Jewish interpretation, which also gives you all the fundamental Jewish values. The mitzvot, conduct, building institutions, and then finally, I'll give you one more before I get to the one I'm really leading to. You know that the beginning of the sermon is never where the sermon is supposed to end up, right? Otherwise, I'd already be done. And you'd be home. And there'd be no announcements, and that would be a tragedy. Ralbag, Gersonides, who was a medieval philosopher, said, what does it mean when the poet says, this is my God, and I'm going to glorify him? He's giving you a signal. He's saying, I'm about to speak about God in ways that really aren't legitimate. Because what does it mean to say I'm going to glorify God? I know I can't glorify God. I'm just a human being, but all I've got is human language. So I want you to know I'm about to write a poem about God, even though to speak about God in human words is not really allowed. Because how can you possibly describe God? So for Ralbag, the poem is about not being able really to write a poem about God. It's about the gap that exists between God and human beings. And as much as you seek to glorify God, know that you are as nothing before the creator of the universe. And that fills in the last piece of the puzzle except for one. Because now you not only have all the things you can do for God, but you also have the realization that beside God, we are very small indeed. So we do our best, but really, we do it to improve our own characters, not because God needs for us to do it, since God is infinitely greater than anything we can conceive and anything we can change. But the rabbi split this word apart. And in this, I think, is the most beautiful and most powerful meaning of ve'anvehu. Ve'anvehu, they say, is really a conflation of two words. Ani, which means I, and who, which means him. Ani v'hu. What did Israel feel when they crossed the Red Sea? They felt that they were at one with God. For the first time, they realized that God is not only out there, that God is also right here. That God was not only a God who wreaks plagues, but a God who is inside. A God in whom you have a spark, a God who is with you, a God who accompanies you through your days and doesn't abandon you at night. A God who was with them even in the slavery of Egypt and now stands with them on the second side of the sea. A God who will wander with them in the desert, and a God who will build a state with them in the land of Israel. A God who will be with them as their children are born, a God who will be with them as they pass from this world. A God who is never absent, even when God feels absent. Ani v'hu, God and I, we're all of a sudden one word, anvehu. And what does it mean to exalt God? It is to live exaltedly because God is never separate from us, even though God is, in some sense, infinitely greater and other than us. It is the central idea of the Jewish tradition put together in one word, which is, we're not God, we're separate from God, God is greater, but there is a spark of God in each of us, and God is never far away. As close, the Talmud says, as the mouth is to the ear, that's how close God is, because even when you whisper in your heart, God hears you. That's why Sadia Gaon says, the medieval philosopher, Ani Vahu means I am with him and he is with me. And that realization all of a sudden came to the Israelites at the second side of the sea, because you can imagine that they thought, okay, so God's in Egypt, but God's not going to be in the desert. They had no experience of the desert. They didn't know if God was going to be in the desert. And now all of a sudden they're on the other side of the sea and God's still there. And even though they knew theoretically that God was supposed to be everywhere, it was at that moment that they felt it and they knew it in their hearts. Oh my, God is here too. Not just in Egypt, but in the desert. And God will be with us in Israel. And God will be with us wherever we go, because after all, we are a people that began in exile, which meant that God doesn't only dwell in Israel, but anywhere that the Jewish people go, ve'anvehu, anivahu, God is there. In this single word is the historical experience of our people. And there are moments, if we are lucky, and if we keep at it, when suddenly you feel a sense, you get a glimpse, you hear a whisper of God's presence in your life, and that powerful moment stays with you. And because it is so powerful, because it is so immediate, because it can be so gripping, you might believe that no one has ever experienced this before. What the Israelites felt at the second side of the sea, they must have thought, oh my, nobody has ever had anything like this happen to them in all of history. I feel that God is with me. And that's why the next line is in the poem. Elohei Avi v'Aromimenu. This is the God of our ancestors, and we will uplift him. Because the message is that that powerful experience that you have, it is not only your experience. It's the experience of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, of Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. It's the experience of our people. It's the experience of everyone who turns to God. Karov Adonai l'chol karov. God is close to all who call upon God. That's what the Israelites realized at the far side of the sea. And so they expressed it in the only way that you can express beauty in a new way, which is to create a poem. And that poem celebrated their deliverance and the miracle of being out of Egypt, but really what it celebrated was the experience of feeling God in their lives for the very first time. They saw God, maybe even knew God, but it wasn't until they were free and they stood at the sea that they experienced God. And now we go back to Rabbi Yishmael, because all the things that he teaches us to make beautiful, the tzitzit, the tefillin, the sukkah, the lulav, all the things that Ibn Ezra says we should do, building sanctuaries and synagogues, all the conduct that Abba Shaul teaches us should be ours, chanun v'rachum, that we should be compassionate and merciful, all of these ultimately are ways of bringing God into our lives. All of them are a way of uniting ourselves with the one who created us. We're all reaching towards the anvehu, towards that unity of human being with the divine. That is the goal, even if never completely achieved in this world, that is the goal of our tradition and is the yearning of our souls and is the hope of our Creator. So on this Shabbat Shira, the song is not only about the song that the Israelites sing, it's the song of our souls. It's our hope that we can be closer and closer to the one who created us, that we can create a community and secure a land where that is possible, that we can build sanctuaries and synagogues where we and our children and our children's children can learn the song for generations as it has been passed to us for 1,000 years. Az Yashir Moshe Uvenei Yisrael. This is how they sang. But I remind you of this. What precedes the song tells the story. Because what comes right before the song is the phrase, Vayaminu Badonai Moshe Avdo. They believed in God and in Moses, God's servant, Az Yashir, and so they sang. Once we believe, we can sing, and once we sing, we are led to faith. On this Shabbat, let us pray that Ve'anvehu becomes a reality in our lives, that through our actions, through our goodness, through our mitzvot, through our community, through our devotion, that our souls sing the song of God, the song of our ancestors, and God willing, the song of our descendants. Shabbat Shalom.